This episode of Warwick the Ajax is brought to you by our backers on Patreon. Matt and I are supporting the show through your donations on Patreon for the year of 2015, and we've already had a lot of people sign up. If you haven't and you want to help out the show, head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Your fellow donors have already unlocked several bonus pieces of content for you, including monthly Every Story Ever shows, a listener questions segment, and a listener questions Tumblr that we have set up at warrocketpodcast.com. .tumblr.com. And our next milestone goal at $750 a month will be that I, Chris Sims, not an artist, someone who can barely draw at all, will be doing sketches every week inspired by what we talk about on the show. So if you want to see those, get over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and help support what me and Matt are doing and have been doing for over 5 years. Thanks.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
He's back, War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. We're your hosts, the faces that run the places. My name's Chris Sims. With me, as always, barely tolerating my jokes as usual, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling all right, Jack.
Listen, some of you like him and some of you hate him, but that's okay because you download the show.
That's right, because I'm here every week.
That's true. You're here even when I'm not here.
To entertain the War Rocket Ajax universe. I actually said all of the words War Rocket Ajax, which is not like when they say WW War Universe. Like, they can't get out all of WWE when they say WWE Universe for some reason.
They have a lot of trouble. They have a lot of trouble.
The WW War Universe.
The WR Universe.
Yeah.
The WR Universe. Folks, we have a great show for you this week. Not that you would know it from this intro. We are going to have a really good time. We've got Tom Fowler here, who is going to be talking to us about literally everything except comics for about a half hour. We do get into some comics towards the end of the interview, but it's a real fun time. Just hanging out with one of our good friends and a great artist and comics professional. We will get to that, but Matt, how about we move on into our opening segment, Checks and Wrecks?
Let's hit it. All right, Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
A couple things. The main one is that there has been an announcement of a new project from me and Chad Bowers. That's pretty exciting. We are doing a 6-page backup story in Bill and Ted number 2. And I guess the bigger news on that is that Brooke Allen, who is the artist of Lumberjanes, is drawing it. So that's very, very exciting. That's going to be out in April.
That is extremely exciting. I'm pumped for that.
Yeah, we've done little short backups before, and if you write comics, like short backup stories are really hard because you have no room to do anything. And our solution to get around that was to write about 12 pages worth of story and just put a lot of panels on each page. So Brooke Allen has her work cut out for her on that front. We've seen her layouts, and they're really great. I don't know how much I'm allowed to reveal about the story, but it's been solicited. So it is a story focusing on Missy, the stepmother of both Bill and Ted at various times. And that was a really fun aspect of that weird little universe to deal with. Matt, when was the last time you watched the Bill and Ted movies?
It's been a while. It's been quite a while. Maybe since the 90s.
All right. Bill and Ted 1 was on Netflix, I think. Yeah. I think it's on Netflix streaming. And Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure really holds up. I think it's really fun. It's goofy as all hell, but it's really fun. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is weird. It's not that it doesn't hold up. It's that, like, it is almost at the point where it it's hard to believe it exists. Like, it's hard to believe that they did a sequel and that was the sequel. Because, I mean, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is – there's a very easy high concept to it, right? Like, you know, these two kind of idiots – go back in time and meet historical figures, important historical figures. Like, that's the joke.
And George Carlin is there.
And George Carlin is from the future. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I don't know how much of that movie you remember, but they go to hell at one point.
I remember that part.
They face their personal hells, which are like reliving bad memories and fears. There's also a lot of really inadvisable language in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey that the first movie doesn't have.
Well, Chris, it's a bogus journey.
It is. It is a truly bogus journey. But yeah, like, I mean, again, I enjoy the movies, and if you haven't seen them in a while, they are totally worth watching. But man, Bogus Journey is weird. Like, it's almost a movie we should do for movie fighters. Like, just because it's weird.
Yeah.
Death raps in it.
I remember that too. I remember hell and death rapping. I remember little of like the actual structure of the movie.
Well, if you are a Bill and Ted fan, I should note that me and Chad and Brooke's story is inspired by the events of Bogus Journey. So keep an eye out for that.
Very exciting.
The other thing that's happening is that my office chair is broken. It's like weirdly leaning forward every time I sit in it, so it's like I'm falling out of the chair. I'm recording this in my living room.
I thought I wasn't hearing constant creaking.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
A chair.
I've got to get a new chair, but so we're at patreon.com/warrocketajax. Everybody, Papa needs a chair. Matt, what are you up to this week?
So I just wanted to. I haven't mentioned it since we came back from the holiday break. But if I sound a little crisper and clearer, it's because I am talking into a brand new microphone and have been for the past three episodes of War Rocket Ajax. It is yet another Blue Snowball, but it is a new one, and apparently they have improved them quite a bit. Like, the old Blue Snowballs could only record in mono. This one can record in stereo.
Stereo.
Yeah, even though this
moved back and forth in front of my microphone. I don't know if that did anything for you.
It did not, because we're recording the podcast in mono, not stereo. But
Phil Spector style.
That's right. But there's a reason why I bought an extra microphone, a second microphone, and that's because my wife and I decided to start our own podcast, another podcast, where we're going to be doing improv-style stuff, where we're each going to be playing characters, one of whom is the host and one of whom is the guest in every episode. In the first two episodes of our new show, and I don't know when we're going to put it up or anything like that. We've recorded one. But in the first two episodes, in one of them, I'm a character who is a host and Marlene is playing herself. And then she's going to play a character who's a host and I'm going to be myself, just so we can kind of introduce ourselves. And then from that point on, we're just going to be characters talking to each other. I do not know how it's going to turn out. The first one we recorded, I think, is really funny, where I'm kind of like a morning DJ guy. So I think it's pretty good. But now I've got two microphones that we can record that with. If we are, for some reason, in the future, recording an episode of War Rocket Ajax, if you're at my house for some reason, Chris...
You have cats, so I would not be.
I have one cat.
One too many.
But if we needed like two microphones to record a show, I have two now. So that's pretty cool. And I also just like really like recording through this new microphone. It is not a complete mess like the other one is. So I enjoy it. I enjoy talking into this new microphone. I hope I sound better on it. Okay,
you sound very crisp.
Thank you. All right, that's my check. Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
I'm going to make a qualified rec. I got the new Saints Row where you get to play as Kinsey, but I haven't played it yet, so that would be my rec, and you can kind of assume that's going to be my rec next week, because why would it not be?
It's a preemptive rec.
But the qualified rec that I'm going to make is for a game I actually got for Christmas on the Nintendo 3DS. And it is Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright. If you're a longtime listener, you'll know that I have a love of both of those franchises. And it seems like it's such a no-brainer. It's such a thing where it's like, yeah, of course there should be a crossover between these two games. Because one of them, you know, is all about kind of wacky characters and solving puzzles, but you don't really do anything with the characters. The other game is all about these weird courtroom things where you have to use this very specific kind of logic, but all the stuff where you're going around gathering evidence and, you know, the kind of puzzle aspect that you have to do to advance the story is kind of the weakest thing about it. Like, you just need to poke the screen enough to move the story along. And I say that as someone who loves Phoenix Wright. I love the story of Phoenix Wright, but like, I love Phoenix Wright in the way that I could be perfectly happy almost reading 75% of that story. And like that kind of, you know, it's more of a visual novel than a game in a lot of ways, except for the courtroom scenes. So it feels like the obvious thing is to do a Professor Layton game that you do the Layton puzzles to get the evidence, and then you do the Phoenix Wright stuff in the courtroom. That's not really quite how it works out, at least at this point in the game. I'm pretty far into it. I'm about 4 hours into the game, and I tend to solve the puzzles pretty quickly because I'm smart, despite what you may have heard from game show casting directors. Very smart guy. And the courtroom scene at the beginning, because the thing that I really like about the game is that it does exactly what you want it to do for the intro section. You play as Professor Layton and you kind of start in on this Layton case, and then it gets to a point where the perspective shifts and you have to do a Phoenix Wright case and you do all the courtroom stuff as Phoenix Wright. And then it gets into the main story of the game, and the dialogue to puzzle ratio is off by quite a bit. There are not nearly as many puzzles and they do not advance the plot in the way that I really was hoping that they would. I'm 2 hours maybe into the, like maybe 3 hours into the main storyline of the game. And I have yet to get to the second trial scene, which, coming from loving Phoenix Wright as much as I do, you know, that game is pretty evenly split between exploration and courtroom. I am enjoying it. I'm definitely going to finish the game. But I am also a huge, huge fan of both of those franchises. It doesn't go together quite as well as I want it to, but I'm stoked that it exists more than anything else.
Yeah.
Matt, what would you have to recommend this week?
My recommendation is a new show that premiered actually just this week, or I guess when you're listening to this, last week.
World premiere,
world star, hip hop. It's a new show called The Nightly Show. It's the show that follows The Daily Show now that the Colbert Report is over, hosted by Larry Wilmore. I had not seen the three episodes that have aired so far, four episodes, until tonight, actually. As a cord cutter, I watch all my Comedy Central content on Hulu Plus.
Cut the cord.
That's right. So I have just been I just watched the episodes that have aired as of today. Like, today I started watching them. And I really like the format of the show. Larry Wilmore does, like, a little monologue. He does a short piece at his desk where he talks about a topic. And then he brings in a panel of four people to talk about that topic. And every week, or every episode, I should say, so every night, he does one specific topic. So the night of the State of the Union, he talked about the State of the Union and President Obama. There was one episode where he just talked all about Bill Cosby, which was really interesting. My one complaint about the show is that the panel stuff isn't always funny. So at times it feels like a show that might be on PBS rather than Comedy Central. But the rest of the show does a very good job of making things funny. And they managed to make the panel funny in the second panel segment, because there's one panel segment where they're just talking about the topic, and then there's a panel segment after that called Keep It 100, where Larry Wilmore asks each of the panelists a question, and they have to keep it 100, as in keep it 100% honest. They have to answer completely honestly. If he thinks they kept it 100, he gives them a little token that says 100 on it. If he thinks they did not keep it 100, he throws tea bags at them for their weak tea.
Oh, I wish we could adopt that for this show.
Which I think is pretty fantastic.
Hey, look outside your window. Is there an Amazon drone there with tea?
Weak tea, son. Weak tea. Then at the end of the episode, he takes a question from somebody on Twitter and has to keep it 100 himself, which I think is very funny. Like, it's a show format. Like, the big complaint about the Colbert Report when it premiered was that, like, people didn't think it could sustain itself, because it was this, like, Bill O'Reilly parody, right? Yeah. That is not a problem with the nightly show at all. It is a very sustainable show.
It turned out to not be a problem with the Colbert Report either.
Not at all. But that's because Stephen Colbert is one of the most talented, funny people on the planet Earth, right?
Yeah.
And I think Larry Wilmore is very talented and funny too, but I think this is
Larry Wilmore is one of my... I've kind of fallen off of watching The Daily Show as much as I used to, but Larry Wilmore was always... like one of the like sharpest and funniest contributors.
He's really good at handling the panel. Like he doesn't let the panel go off the rails. He lets everybody talk. He's a really good moderator, in addition to just like being really funny in his desk segments. So I think it's going to be a really good show. I mean, it's just the first week, so it's not everything I think the show's going to turn into eventually. But as it is, I think it works really well. And so far, every panel segment I've seen has had like one person on it who is the dissenter. Like there was the one guy who said he thinks Bill Cosby didn't commit any of those rapes. And there was the one anchor from TheBlaze.com who...
Glenn Beck's The Blaze?
That's right. Who, you know, didn't have good things to say about the State of the Union. So, it's interesting. I really like the way it is shaped up so far. Again, my one complaint is those panel segments could use an injection of humor sometimes, but I think that's a minor complaint.
Quick supplementary mini rec, since you mentioned The Blaze. There's a call that Tim Heidecker made to The Best Show where he talked about how he was working for The Blaze writing microblogs. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. It's and they recently went ahead and uploaded all of The Best Show archives on WFMU.org. They were in real audio in the year of our Lord 2014. So now I think they're all up in a pop-up flash player. So just go search for the Tim Heidecker appearances until you get to the one where he talks about microblogging on The Blaze. It's amazing.
There's
well worth your time.
I think it was a Comedy Bang Bang. There's a Comedy Bang Bang where Tim and Eric both are talking about how they quit comedy to go work for The Who. That I really love.
Oh, man. Those right. Guys.
Those are our checks and recs. Funny. Yes, those are our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
All right. We took a little break from talking about Justice League for maybe a month, but we're back to it now. We're going to be talking here first about Justice League number 38, which is an absolutely ridiculous comic book.
It's not ridiculous in the way that I want it to be. For it to have this premise.
Which is Batman gets bat-based superpowers.
Which is, oh my god. Oh my god. I wanted to... look, we're not fans of Justice League. I think we've established that pretty well over the past 3 years. I wanted to throw this book on the ground when I got to Batman using his bat superpowers.
The explanation of why his superpowers are bat-based. Let's rewind for a second. The Amazovirus has been unleashed all over Metropolis from LexCorp headquarters, right?
And not even Metropolis, but like all over the world.
Yeah, it is spreading all over the world. And we get the explanation that it gives regular humans superpowers, but then they die.
Yeah, so it's what it is a zombie story. It's the Justice League versus zombies, except for the zombies also have superpowers.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, though. So we hear that this virus has been unleashed. It kills people, and it gives them superpowers.
And if you have superpowers, it takes away your superpowers.
So, Batman...
It's very difficult.
Batman has been infected. He gets sonar powers. It takes away his sight, but all his other powers are, or all his other senses are enhanced and gives him like crazy sonar powers.
Not only does it take away his sight, he bleeds from his eyes.
Yes. And his explanation as to why he must have bat powers is that the virus must take some psychological part of a person, or like take what they're thinking about and make powers out of that, which means that Batman is thinking about bats all the time.
Okay, now when you put it that way, you just made me like this issue like a million percent more. Because like in my conception of Batman is that he is like straight up thinking like, God, Batman, that's so fucking rad. Bats are so fucking cool.
I would think about how much he thinks about hating criminals all the time. Or how much he hates crime, I should say.
Well, Matt, he already has super hating crime powers.
That's true.
Here's the thing that bugs me about this. There's a couple things that bug me about this. One is that it's like this story should, by all rights, be like really fun. It's a weird everybody on Earth gets superpowers, but they're also zombies story. Like, so it should have a little bit of that self-aware goofiness that we get in books like Marvel Zombies, you know? Like, right. Super-powered zombies are, like, it's a mashup idea.
They're
so
inherently, they're inherently silly.
Yeah, they're inherently at least goofy, you know? Instead, this book is, you know, we get a close-up of Batman's eyes bleeding. Which, of course we do. Why wouldn't we?
Now, we should mention the artist for this issue, who is Jason Fabok.
Jason Fabok.
Who is, like, the poster boy for DC House style.
Yeah, you've written about that before.
But I don't think the art is bad. I think it's fairly good. I do think it's weird that the Amazovirus Patient Zero, who I suppose is supposed to be, like, the new 52 version of Amazo, even though Amazo showed up on one page of Justice League already defeated in like issue 7 or something like
that.
Well,
look, to be fair, how can Geoff Johns keep track of what Geoff Johns has written?
He looks like Nemesis from Resident Evil 3.
Yes, he does. That is a good catch.
I don't know why, unless it's like a direct zombie reference thing.
I think Jason Fabok is a perfectly fine artist, but I think this issue has kind of the same problem that we've had with a lot of what we've seen of his work, where it's not really a matter of the penciling or the inking. It's the coloring. Like, they're fighting in a brown city full of brown smoke.
Right.
The interior scenes, I like the, you know, the contrast of Superman and Lex Luthor. Because they're all, you know, Superman's wearing a shiny blue costume and Lex Luthor's wearing a shiny green and purple costume. But they're fighting in a beige room. You know, they're in a dimly lit beige room. Everything is dimly lit in beige in this comic, which I'm not a fan of. It's so, so super serious. Take a moment to go like, hey, super zombies.
Yeah. Half this comic is Lex Luthor explaining why he created the Amazovirus.
Yeah. By the way, everybody's surprised by that.
Yeah. To kill Superman. Or if there's like an invasion of Kryptonians, to deal with that.
Yeah, but mainly he wants to kill Superman.
You could knock that out in one word balloon in one panel. This takes like 5 pages.
The best writing that Johns has done at DC has been Superman. Like, far and away. Far and away. I feel like he has a handle on Superman and Superman's supporting cast better than anything else he has in the DC universe, particularly Batman.
I agree with that.
In the interest of not being entirely negative, I really like that he has Lex, like, kind of reflexively give a bullshit reason for what he's doing. He's like, yeah, you know, the Phantom Zone could break open and we'd have all these Kryptonian criminals. I could take away their superpowers. And then, like, Superman calls him out and he's like, no, you were trying to kill me, you fucking asshole. I really like that. There is dialogue in this comic that is just awful. And it's from characters that, you know, Johns has had really big success writing. Like, there's a word balloon from Captain Cold where I sent this to you earlier today. Yeah. I typed it out where it's the glaciers that covered this planet leveled mountains and carved valleys into it. What do you think I could do to you with my cold gun? Oof. And then there's a panel where Lex Luthor literally looks at a man and tells that man who he is and what his origin story is.
Yeah.
Which is the worst. Which is the, like, at the very least, the way around that is to put one other person in that scene and go, hey, who's that guy? And then it's not, you're not telling someone their own name.
Now that we've talked about all that, I'm going to talk about the worst thing about this issue.
Worse than that explaining who you are? Listen, you're Matt Wilson. You do a podcast with me, and you're going to tell me there's a worse part of that dialogue?
Yes.
Okay, what you got?
The worst thing about this issue, and what I assume is going to be the issues to come, is that this is another fucking story where the good guys are the bad guys.
Yep.
Fuck that. Fuck that so much. And again, this could be fun. In a comic book where the good guys fight the bad guys in every story. One where the good guys become the bad guys by turning into infected zombies is a neat idea.
You know what's fucked up? I hadn't even realized it.
In a comic where the good guys have been the bad guys in every fucking story, it's just another way to do that same goddamn thing. It's infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the fucked up thing is that I didn't even realize it, because at the end, when it's like, you know, whatever is possessing Batman is like, I'm gonna fight you, Superman, and Superman's like, oh, no. It's like, yeah, you guys just did this. You guys just did this, and then you just did it before that, and you just did it before that. Like, you know who's a good villain? Amazo.
You know who are good villains? Villains!
All right, that's enough. That's enough about Justice League 38.
Okay.
We are continuing to hate read it.
Yeah.
Not doing our careers any favors.
Nope. Okay, but we are about to talk about two DC books that we liked.
Yeah.
The first one that I want to talk about is The Kitchen number 3. Now, I don't think we talked about issues 1 or 2 of this series, but it's a crime series from Vertigo, drawn by Ming Doyle, who is great as always. And written by Ollie Masters. And the easy way to describe this book is that it's like a Martin Scorsese film set in the 70s as a comic. Or in some ways I kind of feel like it reads like an HBO crime series. I love the way Ming Doyle draws the 1970s hair on all the characters and clothes. Basically, the story is there are these mob wives. They're all part of the Irish mob. Their husbands go to jail, and so they have to take over, kind of out of necessity, they have to take over their husband's crime operations. And in the process, they find out that they're better criminals than their husbands. And so they decide they're just going to take over completely. And the way that this issue ends is they just kind of say, like, you know what? We don't need our husbands. we're just going to, like, even if they're getting out of jail, we don't need them. We're running this thing now. And it's really great. The art is great. I think the story hits all those crime story beats with doing some things really differently. And it packs, it has packed a ton of story into three issues. This is going to be an 8-issue series, and I feel like it's going to accomplish so much in those 8 issues because so much has happened already just in 3. It feels like, you know, we've gotten the first act of a really good movie in these first 3 issues. I'm enjoying it a lot. I really, really like it. And I'm always up for seeing more of Ming Doyle's art.
Yeah, Ming is fantastic. She's a friend of the show. Everything she has done in comics is worth your time.
And, like, she has this very distinct style, but it applies to different genres so well. Like, you know, we first kind of became aware of Ming with Kevin Church's webcomic, The Loneliest Astronauts, which was a sci-fi thing that she did a great job with. She did a great job with Mara, which was kind of like a political allegory with sports.
A political sci-fi sports manga?
Yeah. And then this is a 70s crime book that she's also doing a great job with. So hats off to you, Ming. And now we're just going to talk really briefly about Batman 66, number 52.
Yeah, this is a non-Jeff Parker issue of Batman 66, which is always interesting to see. It's a fill-in by Rob Williams, with art by Ruben Procopio, and obviously the cover is done by Mike and Laura Allred, as usual. And it's a story about the Joker becoming a superhero named Joker Man, and then being very upset when everyone guesses his secret identity. that gag alone made it worth it, but I love the look that the Joker has in this, which is that he's wearing a Batman costume, but instead of bat ears, he has little Harley Quinn tassels, like little jester tassels on his head. And he takes out all the criminals in the city and is being presented with the key to the city. Which is treated as something that he cannot get his hands on, which I love. I love the idea of the key to the city being an object that has, like, actual, genuine importance.
Yes, I've always loved stories where the key to the city actually opens things.
Yes, it's fantastic. And the key to the city actually shows up in a couple of Jeff Parker stories. Jeff Parker and Scott Kowalczyk, who was the artist on Downset Fight, the graphic novel that Chad and I co-wrote, he drew the King Tut story that was called The Osiris Virus. And it is, guess what? It's a story where King Tut turns Gotham City into zombies, and they fight Batman. And you see Mayor Linseed, like, just he, as though he carries around the key to the city at all times because he's using it to fight off zombies in the street, which is one of my favorite things I've ever seen. Scott did an amazing job with that issue if you haven't seen it. And also did an amazing job with Downset Fight, which you should get. It's available digitally and will be coming back in print soon. Plug, 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 plug. But yeah, a great little fill-in. If you haven't read Batman 66 in a while, I actually have gotten to the point where I kind of, you know, I'm subscribed to it, but I kind of like to let them stack up a little bit. I do the same thing with Batmanga. But go check this one out. It is a very, very fun Batman 66 adventure.
See, DC Comics, we like 2 out of 3. Cut us some slack.
So don't be sad. Don't be sad, 'cause 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yep. Kiss straight to Meatloaf. Kiss last week, Meatloaf this week. We are not going to be talking Meatloaf.
Did you say Kiss from a Rose, Matt?
I did not.
Baby!
We gotta talk to our guest now, and we're not gonna sing any songs to him. We are, however, gonna talk about beer and sody pop and some other topics. It's time to talk to our Canadian friend. Tom Fowler.
My mommy raised him since those early days, back when Santa brought him all his presents. He got a toy gun for Christmas, pointed at his sister. They just dismissed it. Boys will be boys, cowboys and Indians. Call of Duty score rising up into the millions. He got headshots splattered to the heavens, washed like water off the brain in a second.
Joining us for the program this week, we have an old friend of ours who is back for another round here on War Rocket Ajax. You will know him from his work on the Thrilling Adventure Hour comic, as well as favorite titles of mine like Quantum and Woody and Mysterious the Unfathomable, Tom Fowler.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
You make it sound so confrontational. I promise I won't make Matt cry this time.
Do I? I don't think I make it sound confrontational.
Another round.
Yeah, look, it could be another round.
Is this how you want to start things, Sim?
Could be another round of physical combat. It could be another round of drinks.
I'm drinking a refreshing glass of water right now.
I'm having a cup of coffee. Matt, what are you having?
A soda pop.
What kind of soda pop you got over there, buddy?
A Sunny Drop.
What? What is that? Is that like one of them crazy American drinks?
Yeah, Sun Drop is a regional soda. formerly known
Recently went national.
The Golden Cola.
Really? Is that what they called it?
They did.
Tell them what kind of weird sodas they have up there.
They have Coke.
Okay.
They have Pepsi.
Okay, born in the Carolinas since 1888.
Yeah, and I believe that's all.
You don't have you've got to have some weird Canadian soda.
Wait, hold on.
I don't know. Soda wise, no. But we have weird stuff like iced tea up here is like nothing that has ever touched tea ever. It is a crazy concoction that is basically you buy like cans of powder,
yeah,
and mix it into water. It is not tea by any stretch of the imagination.
It's like half a step above Snapple.
I don't even know. I mean, it's like Kool-Aid, but it's like tea flavored Kool-Aid with like a poop ton of sugar in it. It's very hard to describe, but like I've had, you know, American friends come up and drink it and go like, what is this? And, you know, I remember the first couple of times I went down to the States and had iced tea, like in the Northern United States. And I was like, Oh God, this is actual tea. You just left tea out. And then, you know, going to the Southern United States and going like, oh yeah, that's the stuff. iced tea here, I just can't. It's a strange. It's like that in ketchup chips. That's what we got.
Yeah. Now ketchup chips, and all dressed chips.
Oh, do you not have those?
No, all dressed is not a thing we have. Like to the point where that is a weird phrase when applied to a food.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, you get like. All dressed baked potatoes and stuff like that.
No, we do not refer to them by that. We do not refer to them by those words.
Whatever you say, we speak English up here.
The word in the United States.
All dressed chips is essentially just like a bag of chips and MSG. And you just like shake up the MSG and that's that.
The word in the United States for an all dressed baked potato, I believe, is loaded.
Yeah, loaded is what we call those.
Because everything here has to relate to guns somehow.
Yeah, it all has to be about guns.
Yeah.
So we have, like, we call them loaded potato bullets.
Yeah.
Shoot them in your mouth.
American sniper potato.
I could have sworn that the joke that was coming about Canadian soda, I had two guesses. One that it was Canada Dry, which I am shocked that you don't have in Canada.
Oh, we do.
Okay, good.
Well, where do you think it comes from?
Tom, you literally just told us the only sodas you have are Coke and Pepsi. That is the only.
Yeah, but I was lying.
You lied to
because
us.
Because I know that you were being confrontational, and I didn't want to give you anything extra to take a shot at me with.
I wasn't being confrontational, but I am being confrontational now.
And the other joke I thought was coming was, yeah, we got soda here in Canada. It's called Molson.
Yeah, that's something we have. It's always disappointing when you go to a con in the States and there's like a there's a bar set up somewhere, and they're like, hey, what imports do you have? I was like, well, we have Labatt Dry, we have Labatt Ice, we have Molson Blue, we have Molson Canadian, we have, like, you know, and you just kind of look at them and go, oh, you poor thing. You poor deluded soul.
I mean, we also have Budweiser. You may have heard of it. It's the king of beers.
Shouldn't that be the president of beers?
Well,
didn't you fight a war so that – didn't you fight a war with us so that you wouldn't have a king of beers?
Look, we have the king of beers, which is English. We have the champagne of beers, which is French. And I think that's it.
Oh, you've lost me.
Fair enough. What is if I want a good Canadian beer, which I don't because I'm not a beer drinker, but Matt is. Matt's a beer drinker when he's not drinking Sundrop. What's a good Canadian beer? The one that you don't send out.
Honestly, I mean, at this stage, it's kind of like anywhere else now. I mean, there's so many kind of small craft breweries that you may as well just ask what's local and get that. But I mean, if I'm not able to do that kind of thing, I get something called Keith's, Alexander Keith's Pale Ale.
I feel like Keith's beer is the most Canadian thing. Keith's?
It's from Halifax. It's actually very it's lovely stuff.
We're gonna go down to Timmy's and get some Keith's.
Is Alexander Keith like the Sam Adams of Canada?
And you know what? I don't even know. I have a feeling Alexander Keith was deputy governor, deputy general. I can't remember what the provincial ones are called, but I have a feeling he was some political lordly figure in Halifax at some point.
So let me tell you something, Tom. Sam Adams was a brewer and a patriot.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. I mean, I've been watching Sleepy Hollow, so I know all about Sam.
Oh, then the only reason I know that it's not really Sam Adams on the label is because I watched an episode of Sleepy Hollow where Ichabod taught me a history fact.
Well, you know that oatmeal guy isn't really that oatmeal guy on the label, and Mrs. Butterworth, that's not what she looked like. Aunt Jemima. Never happened. There's a really great there's a radio show up here in Canada, which I believe is also a pilot podcast that you can get.
You guys still have radio shows up there?
Yeah, we still have radio.
When you get television, Tom, it's going to blow your mind.
Well, the best part of the story is I've completely forgotten the name of the show. So it's the age of something or other. But it's about advertising. It's by an advertiser who talks about advertising and gets into the history of advertising and things like that. But I do not remember what it's called. So this is a completely useless road that makes me look like an idiot. It makes me look like a guy who's been drinking wine all night while smashing things to paste on graph paper. So
that's right. You are one of the few War Rocket Ajax guests who has come directly to the show from your D&D game.
Twice.
Yeah, that's right. Because you're a Thursday night player. You play on Thursdays.
That's right. It's exciting stuff. Like the goblins and halflings and shit.
Now, so there was wine involved in this?
Yeah, there's always wine involved in this because I always go to like a Costco in Quebec and pick up like a bunch of really cheap wine. And so I always arrive bottle in hand so that I and my hostess can get relaxed
as we play. Listen, you don't want to go into D&D all keyed up.
No, and I can't find anywhere to buy mead. So, you know, wine it is.
All right, well, Tom, look. You do not want to be the guy who shows up to your D&D game with mead. There's like there's a real short step from that to referring to people as a good sir.
it's one step away from a Renaissance fair.
No, look, I'm fine with a Renaissance fair. It is confined to a specific area where everyone agrees that that is what we're doing today. No one ends up at a Renaissance fair by mistake. Maybe they do. Okay, Tom, I'm going to pitch you a graphic novel, okay? You're going to draw this. It's about a guy who ends up at a Renaissance fair by mistake.
He got hit on the head, thinks he's traveled back in time, but really he's in a Renaissance fair.
Yeah, really everyone's just dedicated to their characters.
And he thinks he's destroyed time somehow because everybody has digital watches and wears top hats.
Exactly. And speak modern English, but they just say good sir at the end of everything.
Yeah.
I like the idea of this Renaissance fair where no one from the public is there.
Like, no, everybody's there. They're just playing along.
So everybody dresses up to go to a Renaissance. You know what? I've never been to a Renaissance fair. I've been to Gen Con, which is kind of the same. But there's a part of me that actually wants to just like see what that is. But there's also a part of me that feels shame and wouldn't allow me to actually get into the spirit of it. So I think I would just be a drag to everybody else there.
All right, now Matt, have you ever been to a Renaissance fair?
I've been to several.
Yeah, have you ever been to the North Carolina one?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I have too. I've been to the, my mom teaches, or actually she taught, this is her first week of retirement. Congratulations, Mom, you do not listen to this show. But she taught 8th grade English for a long time, and so as part of her little bit on Shakespeare, they would drive up to the...
I bet she says all dressed. Go on.
No, she would... look, I have had enough baked potatoes. I know she... loaded. I'm telling you, Tom, we have different words down here. We would go to the... We would drag her students up to the Renaissance Fair in North Carolina, which is, as far as I know, is a very highly regarded Renaissance Fair in the Ren Fair community. I enjoy the Ren Fair.
I just remember the one guy at the North Carolina Renaissance Fair who did not talk in Renaissance parlance because he was the guy in the stocks that people threw tomatoes at, and he insulted them. Get them to throw tomatoes. And all his insults were very modern. And they were mostly about people's weight, if I remember right. Yeah. They may have changed that in the intervening years.
Sir, you have the bearing of a rigolo. It's not gonna...
No, you, sir, are a gentleman of carriage.
No, the closest I've ever been to a Renaissance fair is when a bunch of pirates tried to invade our wedding reception.
Okay, that's a story I need to hear. Canada is a magical place.
Was your wedding reception in a boat on international waters?
No, it was it was in a college. It was in a gourmet restaurant in a college in the local college. And I guess that night there was a pirate night in one of the halls down the hallway, one of the big dining halls down the hallway. And at one point, a bunch of pirates tried to crash the reception. And luckily, I was close enough to the door, as was my brother, that we could kind of look at them sternly and say, "You're not coming in here." That said, a group of friends of mine, including Ramon Perez and my D&D hostess this evening, crashed the pirate party and stole a bunch of their booze. So who pirated who?
They're not very good pirates.
Now, Tom, I should say that you are 12 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
You're a very tall man.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that you would look very imposing even on your happiest of days.
Yeah. Well, and my brother is even larger than I am.
Really?
And a former bouncer. So he can turn it on when he wants to. we repelled some boarders.
Yeah.
That is look. How likely do you think it is that these people were like, "Hey, let's not go ruin their party, but let's give them a really great story about pirates trying to board their wedding reception."
I would place kind of 50-50 odds on that simply because these are college students. Do you know what I mean? So they're like, oh, dude, like, it was so cool. We went to this, like, square party, and we really, like, dressed it up and blah. You know what I mean? Like,
it's an all-dress party.
There's a part of it that they were like, we are the coolest people in the world because that room has old people in it.
So they dressed like pirates, and they talked like 1960s hippies.
Yeah, kind of.
Got it.
Well, that's how Canadians talk.
They talk about like, square parties.
I've heard it's still pirate times up in Canada.
It well, up until the 70s.
Are you sure they don't talk in Renaissance insults?
We got jazz in the 70s.
Nice.
And now we're getting those calculators that are like on your watch.
Oh,
Tom. The future of Canada is bright.
Wait, what
oh,
do you,
it is.
What do you get those graphing calculators that you can play Snake on? Because those are the best.
Snakes are that's the devil's animal.
That's
we don't
true.
Have those here.
So back to your D&D game.
You have offended me, sir.
I apologize.
With your talk of the serpent.
I am an ignoble gourmand. I'm sorry. But I wanted to get back to your D&D game because before we started recording, you talked about a little controversy that emerged in your D&D game tonight. And you said you may share it on the show.
Yeah, so here's the deal. All right, we walk into a room that basically looks like a stomach with like an alimentary canal. We're walking up the alimentary canal into a stomach. All right? And there's a giant tentacle monster on the ceiling. And it keeps pooping out smaller tentacle monsters. Everybody else in the group is like, oh, let's just keep killing the smaller tentacle monsters because that's the best strategy.
Okay, look, Tom, I'm going to stop you right there.
All right.
Because I know what you're thinking. You're in the mindset of the character. You're in the mindset of the dude that you always draw who has no pants on and has his giant axe.
Absolutely.
You're worried for your safety.
I was off fighting a Darrow. I was off fighting a Darrow and putting the screws to that dude. Everybody else was fighting these stupid tentacles.
You were fighting legendary attorney Clarence Darrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Clarence Darrow. Yes.
It's a great game. It's a great game. Now, what everybody else was thinking is the more of these tentacle monsters we kill, the more XP per tentacle monster we're going to get.
No,
this was a farming operation.
No, it really wasn't. it was literally like they were like, oh no, this is a great strategy because every one of these things that it poops out diminishes it in some way. So we'll just like kill it by attrition. It was no, you won't. You just kill the thing that's making the things. You know, it was the same as the controversy about when we killed a giant. And I suggested very seriously and with all sorts of forethought about this. This is it. This is a bulletproof plan. You kill a giant, you hollow it out, you crawl inside, and you let the other giants like take you into their castle. I mean, they must have a morgue, right? Like you Trojan horse that shit. That's just common sense. Now, this has become a big controversy around our table, but I'm just saying, like any right-thinking person, you kill a giant, you hollow it out and crawl inside. I mean, come on, that's logical.
Okay, Tom. Okay, A, that's a mega gross plan. That is mega, like it. The interior of a giant is not a hospitable environment. It's going to be, like, from a practical standpoint, mega gross. It's going to smell real bad.
Look, here's the thing. I play a barbarian gnome that eats what he kills and doesn't wear pants. And, you know, it doesn't matter to me.
Okay, second problem with this. You talked about they've got to have a morgue. Well, they don't got to have a morgue. Because it's D&D. The most likely
giants,
I can see happening.
Giants are a very advanced society. In our own world, like just in, forget D&D, in our own world, the bigger you are, the better you are. Like this is just a fact. right? So
again, I want to point out that Tom is about a foot taller than either me or Matt.
you take that and you graph that into D&D. Well, then you have just enormous. They must be wonderful.
Okay. The second problem with this is that what if the person who comes along to retrieve the body is a giant necromancer, and you're stitched up in the hollowed out stomach of this what suddenly becomes a giant zombie?
Then you whack off his, you know, he bleeds out, and then you got two big husks to smuggle yourself in. You got two dead giants. Easy peasy.
There are easier plans than hiding in a dead body.
There may be, but this was a great plan. Bulletproof. Tom, ironclad, bulletproof.
Tom, I don't think I want to play D&D with you anymore. I mean, we've talked about it before. Like, we've talked about how I would very much enjoy playing D&D with you. But, like, if this is how you run your campaign, it's how you run your party.
I don't run. That's the thing. I just make these suggestions. Largely because I want to see the faces of the people around me, but also because there is a genuine, all jokes aside, on graph paper, hollowing out a giant, jumping inside and riding it inside the castle in some way, actually felt like a great plan.
What if they just made a funeral pyre?
Well, then you jump out, you have a fight, but. You know, it's like, it was one of those, like, well, look, we're going to be fighting these other things no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to, like, if we don't crawl inside this thing, then we're going to have to go and, like, knock on the door in some way and have a fight with these guys.
Right, right. Those are our only two options.
Pretty much.
Hollow out a dead body and hide inside it. Or
just fight the other things you were going to have to fight anyway. What I'm getting at is that you avoid the fight with those things. Because you've maybe been transported past them a little way, and then when it's, you know, what I was really hoping was somebody would, like, take the giant to the throne room and say, like, look what they did to Og, you know, and then you jump out and you kill all the rest of them.
Tom, can I suggest a wrinkle?
Like the Trojans did.
Can I just suggest a wrinkle to your plan? So how many people are in your party?
There are six.
Okay.
It's a big party.
Why don't you get in the giant and marionette that motherfucker?
Okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing that really pissed me off is that I suggested the Trojan horse thing. They all rejected it, but I found out later on that's because they thought I was suggesting we'd marionette it.
That's what you should do.
No, it doesn't make any sense, they're going to know that, like, that Og is, you know, all... You know, that's not Og.
Matt, you are also disinvited from any future D&D games.
I just love the idea of, like...
Weekend at Bernie's Og.
Absolutely, Weekend at Bernie's him. Have somebody work the arms and legs and the head. And just, like, he's walking down the street of Giant Town, throwing up an arm and saying, "Hey!" in not his voice. I just love the inherent comedy
of that.
One of
us can work the smirk. No, the thing is, and the other kind of running joke in the whole thing, because I always play characters who are to say the least a little off, and so I always had this running gag of whichever character it is, whoever he kills, or whatever he kills, he eats, because, like, why not, right? And I've loaded on. I've always had, like, a philosophical reason for doing that. Like, I started out playing a Yeti who would do it because it had something to do with a waste not want not philosophy, and they've all kind of built on that in various ways. And now I've leaned into it so much with this new guy that I'm basically playing a character that thinks all the other people in the party are monsters. As far as I'm concerned, I'm a great guy because I tolerate the other monsters. And when they die, I will eat them and I will purify their essence by pooping them out.
I don't want... Look, character death is a very serious concern in D&D. I would be very concerned, not merely for the fate of my character, But you can't, like, it is a much more difficult spell to resurrect someone after they have been eaten and pooped.
Yeah, but I mean, that's when it's, like, death. Like, we're playing 4th edition, right? So there's, like, death-saving rolls and stuff like that. Like, none of this is ever going to happen.
Oh, you're playing, like, a video game.
You can't, you cannot die in 4th edition. Like, you have to fuck up real bad to die in 4th edition, right? So, I'm kind of hoping at some point we start with 5th. Honestly, we do kind of approach it as more of a strategic thing, and I'm the one who's always kind of pushing for let's do a weird thing, and I've gotten into the habit of being the guy that, like, when people are talking about, well, what if we do this? Well, what if we do this? I think that if we do this, then he'll do that. After 5 minutes of that, I'm like, I kicked down the door!
Yeah, see, your party plans. The party that I play with, there's never any planning.
The thing is, they plan it in a very kind of metagaming style. Like, we metagame like crazy. Like, that's how we play. It is for the group that I'm in. Everybody is like, they approach it as a strategy game and less as a role-playing thing. And that's fine with me because I don't want to, like, wear a wizard hat or anything like that, right?
But you want to bring me to the table. There is an element in me
that just wants to get things going and wants to make it entertaining for everybody. Like, I want to be a bit more of an agent of chaos at the table, just to make the game more interesting. Because after a while, if it gets too kind of staid in that strategical sense, it ceases to be fun, you know?
Yeah, I certainly agree.
It becomes like a math problem at that point, right? So I'd rather kind of get in there and eat a few things, and I want to get in there and make some bad decisions.
I was once part of a group with one guy who was really pessimistic about his character's abilities and would metagame everything and do the equations on his character sheet, like in the margins, and then like just give up on doing anything because he was like the opposite of the Midnighter. Like, he had run all the scenarios in his head and they had all ended in failure.
And then the other guy in that party was there.
It got to a point where we had to ban drinking at the table. There's only two of us drinking, and
it's just, you know, a bottle of wine split between two people. So it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. I kind of actually got to the point I'm at now. A few years ago, when we were actually playtesting 5th edition, we were doing a lot of kind of metagamey kind of stuff. And we got to a point in the game where we basically committed genocide. And even in a metagamey kind of, you know what I mean? Like, even in an on graph paper kind of way, it was like, well, yeah, genocide is genocide. I feel kind of bad about this. Like, we just nuked a village. Like, this is kind of bad. So I wound up kind of retconning my character so that he was something, but he had like PTSD from that event. Afterward, I just started kind of hurling myself into things. So there's actually one bit where we're at the bottom of a cliff at a kind of a sunken lake, and a dragon crawls out of it, and everybody just runs like hell, like, to climb back up the cliff. And I'm like, that's okay, I'll hold him off. And so tied a rope around me, you know, started hacking away at him. Got killed like twice, but made saving throws to do whatever, and had like just got out by the skin of my nose. But I was like, that was the most fun I've had playing this game, like just hurling myself into things, you know, rather than kind of sitting and really strategizing every little thing. Like, okay, if I do this, you do that, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do this, which can be fun, but there's a point at which you're like, okay, well, I'm not doing anything. You're just telling me what to do, and I'm rolling a die. You know, there was a point for me where I was kind of, and you know, by this point I was listening to like podcasts about D&D and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's how we used to do it. Like when I was a kid. So I just, you know, I'm pretty much the only guy at the table who's doing that kind of stuff. So because it's not all of us acting like idiots, it makes it more fun for everybody. And there are enough of us who are still strategizing that we, you know, survive. and move our way through the adventure, you know.
Now, Tom, in addition to drinking beverages, eating potato chips, having some Keiths, listening to Canadian radio, or Canadio, as I like to call it, and playing Dungeons & Dragons, you also occasionally draw comics?
Once or twice, yeah.
And you've got
nobody reads them, though.
You have a paperback coming out of Howtoon's Reignition.
Yes, it is what we call in the biz a trade paperback. I don't know why. Ask your question. Set me up because I'm tired.
That was it. Like I was just going to mention it because it's about time for us to move over to Twitter questions. I thought we should probably talk about comics at some point.
Yeah. No. Over the last year, I worked on a children's comic. I know that's unheard of. A comic for children about science that teaches kids, you know, specifically how the science of energy works, but also how to build things and shows them how to build those things and explains to them how those things work and does it all in a fun way and does it all within the structure of an actual narrative that these two kids are moving their way through this book kind of post-apocalyptic world. And they're robot dinosaurs. It was, for me, I think actually, I think one of the most important things I've actually ever worked on, like no joke, I think this is the most important thing I've ever worked on because, you know, in the last 15, you know, over the course of a 15-year career, this is the first time I feel like I've ever done anything good, like for the world, because we're teaching kids, you know, like we're if what we're doing is introducing more kids to comics that they can consume, that's fantastic. If what we're doing is introducing kids to the concepts of science, that's even better. And if what we're doing is getting kids into actually engineering and pursuing the sciences, that's amazing. And you know, on top of that, like this is literally the first time in, you know, since I've become a father, this is the first time I've been able to share my work with my son, like not just while I was working on it in an abstract way, but like all the way through the process to its end so that, you know, at the end of it, he's got a book that he can look at. Whereas, you know, I've drawn like Hulk comics I've drawn a Hulk comic in the past where a dude smokes crack out of a light bulb, you know, like I can't share that with him. He can't see that. So having a thing that's for him is like, it's exciting for him, but it's way more exciting for me. What it's actually led to is, I'm now in a process of putting together the next like 5-6 years of my publishing life. All of which are going to be aimed squarely at my son. I'm in the middle of pitching an all ages book right now, which is actually kind of D&D centric.
I think largely, I know about that one.
Yeah. Yes, you do. But unfortunately, that's as much as I can say about it right now. But again, that's because he's really interested in D&D right now. And it's a book that is ostensibly about heroism, and I want to show him that, you know, heroism isn't about killing things, you know. But it's directed at his level, and it's something that I'll be able to share with him as I'm working on it. And the next thing after that is going to be kind of like a middle grade a middle grader thing, which is, you know, the elevator pitch on that is essentially Goonies in space.
That sounds awesome.
And I actually did I did a prequel to it, as that little CBLDF 3-page short that I did with Parker, in the last CBLDF Liberty annual thing, called Little Star, which is basically it's a little girl growing up on a really like a cosmopolitan space station. So basically, Space Marrakesh. And the original idea, I mean, it all sprang out of a drawing that I did ages ago. But the idea of it originally was to kind of do like a children's picture book featuring this little girl who's, you know, about 4 or 5. And in the same way that you get children's picture books about like a child experiencing the wonder around them, you know what I mean? Like seeing the world through a child's perspective and finding the magic in mundane things. The idea was to take that idea, but then put it on the most magically weird and exotic place, literally in the galaxy. But then have that same child still experiencing that wonder in the mundane. So while all of this is going on around it, it adds a different, it would add a different level to her finding something really remarkable about, you know, a dandelion blowing a dandelion, like that kind of thing. I got at a little bit of that. I got as much of that as I'm likely going to be able to get to in that Liberty Annual thing. But I was like, well, what's this girl going to be like 5-6 years later? That story grew out of that. And I have a YA thing that I'm probably set to roll on after that's done. The title right now is Foreign Legion. That's not going to stay, which is again, based on a painting I did like almost 10 years ago, just large shades of, what was the Alan Moore book, of the girl that goes to war, drawn by Gibson. It's driving me nuts. Anyhow, it's a girl going to war.
Oh, geez, I don't know.
No, it's her name too, and it's driving me crazy because I cannot remember for the life of me what it's called.
Oh, kind of my, Halo Jones. It's Halo,
yeah,
Halo Jones.
Thank you. Yeah. So kind of my version of that, but in a more kind of Tom Fowler-y way. But basically, I'm doing all of these things now, like or at least planning for them now, because the idea of doing of being able to share what I do with my kid is now, like having experienced that for a year is the most important thing in my life right now. It's keeping me happy. It's keeping me enjoying the work that I do. It's I'll do whatever else I need to, but that's kind of my primary focus. And it's opened things up for me in a way that comics can be a bit of a slog, especially corporate books. And there's, you're not always going to be 100% on board with what you're doing. There's a point at which sometimes you will hit a wall and kind of like go like, who is this for? You know, knowing my audience and that audience being, you know, a 7-year-old who's asleep 10 feet above me right now, means I can kind of recommit myself to the work in a very kind of healthy and positive way, and hopefully share that with other kids, you know.
Well, that is exciting stuff. And I'm really glad to hear that you're going to try doing some all ages stuff, because look, Tom, you are amazing at drawing troll dicks. but you know, I see there's stuff in Mysterious that it's like, oh, this, you know, this is perfect, like storybook illustration. So it's really exciting.
Yeah.
To see.
And the thing is too, and the other part of it too is like, I want to approach it from like a Raymond Briggs perspective, or, you know, like just the idea that like, you don't have to coddle children when you're doing stuff for them. You can still make things that are creepy or horrific or scary. But you know, within the context of what, you know, of a children's narrative, you can still do that stuff. Kids can accept it. Kids can read it. Kids can get more motivated by it. And, you know, I don't want to do, there's a lot of kind of all ages, kind of milquetoasty all ages stuff, and some of it's great, some it's not. But I, you know, one way or another, it's not going to change the creator I am. to be aiming this stuff at kids, you know. So hopefully I give a couple of kids some nightmares, but in a good way.
All right. And with that, Matt, do we have time for Twitter questions?
Just a couple.
If our listeners would like to get in on asking questions to our guests over Twitter, Matt, how would they go about that?
Very quickly, what they need to do is kill a giant. They need to get inside that giant's body and walk its body marionette style to its house.
You lost me.
And sit at its giant computer and sign up for an account on gianttwitter.com, which I think is just regular twitter.com.
No, and it's better.
When they sign up for that account, they need to follow the ISB, that's Chris, and High-Minded MW, that's me, on Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. We will put out the call for questions for our guest, and that is the time that you, in that giant's body, can ask a question of our guest, just like the questions you're about to hear right now.
And our first question is going to come from at Charlotte of Oz on Twitter. Tom, you are an artist. I assume you're familiar with the graphical interchange format of image formatting online, the digital image format.
Oh, a GIF?
That was the question. The question was, do you pronounce it with a soft G or a hard G?
I actually pronounce it GIF, but I thought it would be funny to pronounce it GIF.
You were about to. I was about to end the segment and the interview, and our friendship
by calling it. See, I don't know what things mean though. Like, if you spelled out what JPEG meant, there's no way in hell I'd know what that means.
I think it's just pure European goodness.
Calculators on our watches. That's what I'm saying.
Tales to Enrage on Twitter would like to know, what character would you most like to draw in a comic but haven't yet?
The answer is essentially that last 5 minutes of me going on about the books that I want to do. Ideally, I want to be doing my own characters, but if it's corporate characters, I have a Commandy story in me that I would love to do.
That's right, and you did that Commandy cover for Multiversity that looks great.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, which I was just able to post. I think I was just allowed to post today. I don't know. I went ahead and posted.
Well, you did, so.
Yeah. I have a Commandy story, which is essentially my belief that the Stooges song Search and Destroy is a song about Commandy. So I basically just want to do like a 10 to 12 issue series that is that song. But you know, with Commandy, and I've had this like pitch in my back pocket for like 5 years now. And actually last April Fool's, I posted the twart image that I did 5 years ago and said, you know, just got off the phone with my new editor at DC and Commandy. My new Commandy series is a go, and the internet melted down in a Kim Kardashian naked kind of way. So I think there's an audience for it. I'd certainly love to do it, but we'll see. I actually just finished pitching something to DC, which ultimately didn't go through. But you know, so there are avenues to do that kind of thing. But like I said, I'd love to do Commandy. I'd like to take a stab at Rocket Raccoon. I'd love to do an Angel and Ape book.
I would love to see you do Angel and the Ape.
I'd love to do Mysterious again. we'll see. I do have an Angel and Ape pitch.
At Romcom Your Mom on Twitter has a question for all three of us. He would like to know, what is your favorite Howard Chaykin story, and how guilty of a pleasure is it? Tom, do you have a favorite Howard Chaykin story?
Do we mean a story that Howard Chaykin has written and or drawn, or a story about Howard Chaykin?
I think it is a story that Howard Chaykin has written and or drawn. We would be here all night with our favorite stories about Howard Chaykin. Everyone who has been to a con with Howard Chaykin has one.
I know. It's wonderful. I love Twilight. I unabashedly and will forever love Twilight. showed up in my life at exactly the right time for me to take it in exactly the way it needed to be taken in. It's really well written. It's gorgeous to look at. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez brilliance all the way through. And at the time when I was reading it, I was not so well versed in the DC universe that I knew who really any of the characters were. Like, I knew that there had been a character named Tommy Tomorrow at some point, but I didn't know all of the rest of the characters were the old timey DC future people. So they were all just new characters to me, and I just completely took it, this tapestry that was woven, as just this crazy new story, you know?
Matt, do you have a favorite Chaykin book?
Yeah, I think it's American Flag.
It's kind of the default answer, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're being lazy, man.
I'm sorry. But I do like it. I mean, the future satire is kind of like one of my favorite genres. And
yeah.
I think American Flag does it really well. I'm a satire fan. I'm a sucker for it. Nothing else I can say. Chris, what about you?
Black Kiss. That was a joke. I'm hoping we got some laughs out there.
I wanted that silence to go on.
I'm not,
Matt. Like, when you're editing the episode, put like a full 30 seconds.
I'm actually not like a huge Chaykin guy. I know it's shocking for a lot of people. I really like Black Hawk though. But I like his Black Hawk. I like the Burchett Black Hawk that I think Evanier wrote. But his Black Hawk did the very noble goal of dealing with Chop Chop in a way that was like didn't make anything better. Being. Yeah, but it made him a human being, exactly.
Yeah.
And Black Hawk is I don't think I've ever really talked about it. Black Hawk's one of my favorite DC concepts. Like I'm a sucker for that kind of swashbuckling post-war age of aviation kind of story. It's always something that I've wished there was a little more of. You know, the men's adventure novel, dudes with planes. What's better than this? Dudes flying planes kind of story. And that is going to be it for our Twitter questions segment. Thanks for everybody for sending those in. Sorry the interview ran a little bit long this time, but we got some news about exciting projects and some news about Canadian booze. So, Tom Fowler, if people would like to hear more about those two things, where can everybody find you online?
They can find me on Twitter at Tom Fowler Bug, where I just recently announced that Howard Chaykin is my spirit animal. They can find me blog-wise on my almost never-updated Blogger blog, which you can just find at bigbugillustration.com, or just Googling me, and I'm the guy who did not play bass for Frank Zappa. Or on the two Tumblrs, there's tomfowlerstuff.tumblr.com, where I post stuff. And there's tomfowlerddd.tumblr.com, better known as DNDND, where I post all the drawings that I do while I am crawling inside of hollowed out giants.
All right. Our guest has been Tom Fowler. Make sure to check out Howtoon's Reignition out in paperback on March 10th. So pre-order it now at your local bookstore. Tom, thanks for joining us. It is always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. And one last thing about Howtoons is, for parents out there, remember, if you have more than one kid, buy more than one issue, because kids hate to share.
Words of wisdom.
Thanks once again to Tom Fowler for joining us. Definitely just go check out his Tumblrs. He's got a lot of great stuff on there, and you can see all those pantsless D&D characters that he likes to draw. But now it is time for our post-interview segment. Now, as we mentioned, we did unlock on Patreon a listener questions segment that we will be doing bi-weekly, alternating with our other post-interview segment. But since we just unlocked that level today, we don't have any listener questions. So send those in. to warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. But in the meantime, we're going to do an installment of our list of the 100 best comic book quotes of all time.
That's right. And I got a lot of suggestions in the past week for what we should call this segment. And I think I have a winner, but we're going to modify it slightly. All right. This suggestion came from Lyndon Kaiser.
That's an awesome name.
Yes. He said we should call it the World Heavy Word Championship.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
I'm suggesting that it's the Word Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, that's good too. I like the Word Heavyweight Championship.
I believe that is what we're going to call this segment. It is time to proclaim who the heavyweight champion of words is. This is the Word Heavyweight Champion. All right, here's how this works. People send us lists of quotes. We add those quotes to a list of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time. The number one quote will be the Word Heavyweight Champion of comics.
That is true. Just so everybody knows where we stand, our number one ranking line of comic book dialogue right now is "I did it 35 minutes ago," that Ozymandias' little speech at the end of Watchmen. We have a line from Elsa Bloodstone about having two Uzis and a shovel. Ra's al Ghul saying, "You pursue me past your dying. Are you man or fiend from hell?" From Daughter of the Demon. With great power comes great responsibility. That's from Amazing Fantasy number 15. And the police wouldn't think to look for your body on Saturn, bringing up the rear from Injustice: Gods Among Us. So, Matt, where are we going to find these quotes this week?
We got these quotes from our good friend, Leonard F. Chikarison.
He's a good guy and a Patreon supporter.
Yes, friend of the show. He sent us these three quotes, which are three more, I would say, old standards.
Okay.
Perhaps you would call them catchphrases.
Oh, okay.
And the first one, and I don't know where it was first used. We may have to look this up. But he attributes it to Philip Jack Brooks, and it was repurposed by Ben Grimm.
Got it.
It's clobbering time.
I would say "it's clobbering time," easily the best catchphrase in comics.
Agree wholeheartedly.
Like, I am willing to put that at number one.
All of Ben Grimm's catchphrases are the best catchphrases.
The blue-eyed idol of millions.
Aunt Petunia's favorite nephew.
Aunt Petunia's favorite nephew. Too dumb to stay down.
Look, yeah. If there's one thing people should really take away from every story ever and this segment, we fucking love the Thing.
he's not the best Marvel character, but the only reason he's not the best Marvel character is because Spider-Man tweaked the formula. Spider-Man is the refinement.
Yeah.
Like, Ben Grimm is number two, Doctor Doom is number three. That's the best Marvel characters.
Yeah. God damn the Thing.
But yeah, it's clobbering time is because it's so comic booky. Because you know that, like, in a real life, like, Ben Grimm would have been the guy who's like, "I'm gonna fuck him up."
Sure.
You can't put that in a comic.
So you have him say, "It's clobbering time."
Yeah. And how many, like, we do not use the word clobber enough in our day to day. And that's a fact.
Clobber or clubber. They gonna do some clubbering in that ring. But
he clubbered him with the plunder. Oh, Dusty.
He got a bicycle. All right, but yeah, like,
yeah, it's clubbering time. New number one.
Yep.
Done. Top of the list. Top of the list.
All right, the next one is pretty good too.
Okay.
From, I believe it's from Detective Comics number 27.
Okay. I think I know where this one's going.
Criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot.
All right, here's a controversial statement. That's not that good a line.
Okay. I can buy that.
It's not that good a line. We think it is because it's important, but it's not actually that good a line. And it's not from from Detective Comics 27, Matt, because you don't get Batman's origin until Detective Comics 33.
Okay.
Heads up, bro.
Thank you. Thank you for informing me of that. Yeah. But it is from the original origin story.
It is from the It is there in the Bill Finger Bob Kane story. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know what? I am tempted to not even put that on the list because it's not that great a line.
I mean,
like, I love that origin. Like, that line means a lot to me. But like, it's clobbering time.
It's not even close to its. It does not beat its clobbering time.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I feel like
we should put it on the list now.
Okay.
And if it gets bumped, it gets bumped. But it can go at the bottom.
Okay. So we're not going to outright dismiss it. Because I will refuse the right. I will reserve the right to just outright dismiss a line.
I think it's too important of a line to outright dismiss. But.
Okay, but I'm putting it after the police will think to look for your body on Saturn.
I think it goes above that. I think it goes right under great power, great responsibility.
Really?
I do.
All right, that's where we'll put it then.
Okay. Because the police won't think to look for your body is number 100, right? I think there's a chance that this could be bumped off the list. Criminals are cowardly and superstitious.
Okay, so you think it might leapfrog the police won't think to look for your body on Saturn?
It's possible. We can do that. We reserve the right to do that.
Yeah, look, it's our show.
Yes. All right, the last one is...
You bought your ticket, you takes your chances.
The catchphrase of a young gentleman by the name of James Howlett, a.k.a. Loganberry, a.k.a. Wolverine. I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice. I do not know where that was first used either.
That has a double C written all over it, man. That is a Mott original.
So that's not from Lynn Wine, Incredible Hulk number 181.
No. I don't know. I would have to go look it up, but there is no way that, like, if Chris Claremont did not write that line, I will eat a shoe.
Okay. We'll have to look up where it was first used, but I kind of hate that line. I kind of hate
really,
that catchphrase. Here's something you need to know about me. I don't really like any of Wolverine's catchphrases. When Wolverine gets catchphrasey, I sort of hate that character. It's why I like the Garth Ennis Wolverine from The Punisher so much, because he's that catchphrasey Wolverine, and he has to like get run over by a steamroller because of it. You know, like, it's that version of Wolverine getting his dues for being obnoxious.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, Wolverine's cool. Like, you can't get around that Wolverine is a cool character. And it looks like, you know, it's such a comic booky phrase, too. Like, I feel like Criminals Are a Superstitious Cowardly Lot is memorable. For two reasons. It's memorable because it's in a very important story, and it's memorable because it's such an odd phrasing. Like, no one would ever say that out loud.
And it's also, like, a justification. It's a justification for why he picks a bat.
Yeah. Like, no, like, it's so weird to think of Bruce Wayne referring to criminals as a lot. Like, they're a superstitious, cowardly lot.
It's also kind of not true. Like, I wouldn't think criminals would be the most superstitious people. I would think their victims would be, but nonetheless, we already ranked that one.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, with I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice. That's kind of like every like it is like it's true is the thing. Wolverine is very good at what he does, and what he does is stab people with six knives that are attached to his hands.
I think it's just part of me just thinks it's too wordy. I think it needs editing.
Yeah, that's why it's a Chris Claremont original, bro.
Yeah, I think it needs editing. I think it just needs to be, I'm the best at what I do, and it isn't very nice. That's all you need to say.
I'm surprised that Leonard did not credit this to one Chris Irvine Jericho.
Okay, but so...
It's such a perfect little child's way of explaining Wolverine. Like,
I think it's
he's
better.
He's really good at what he does, but it's not very nice.
I think it's better than Superstitious and Cowardly Lot.
Yeah, I think it's easily better than Superstitious and Cowardly Lot. So, but you don't think it's as good as With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility?
That one I waver on. I think they're equally overused catchphrases.
I would agree. And I want to say, if people are writing up lists, like, we don't necessarily just want the...
I mean, we have several lists that are not just catchphrases. Okay. I'm just getting them out of the way early.
Right. It's a good thing to place them on the list.
Right. We'll get some more esoteric quotes in the weeks to come.
We like them deep cuts. Now, so what would you say? Below or above With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility?
With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility has more meaning to me.
Okay, here's a thing to think about. Can you, like, has Hugh Jackman said it in a movie? Has there been a Wolverine movie where he said, "I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice"? There has to have been. That dude's been in fucking 7 movies.
I think he said a version of it. I don't think he said those exact words.
Okay. Because he calls Cyclops Bub.
He does.
in X-Men.
I think he may have said, "Well, what I do isn't very nice," separate from saying he's the best there is at what he does. I don't think he said the whole thing all together. But I haven't seen the Wolverine, so I don't know. I've only seen Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Listen, I saw the Wolverine, and it's a piece of shit. That movie gets real interesting when you find out that Wolverine's healing factor lives inside his bone marrow.
Yeah.
And he fights a robot.
I'll say, I mean, With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility has been in a ton of popular media that's not comics, cartoons and movies and other stuff.
Yeah, it's like, it's easy to hear it in your head because we've heard all those actors say it, you know?
Yeah.
But is it actually... I'll tell you, I like the Wolverine line better. But I'm going to give you final call on this one.
I think I'm biased toward the Spider-Man line. So I will say... I'll defer and say we can put the Wolverine line ahead.
Okay. All right. So we're doing that then.
And it's going under Demon from Hell?
Are you Man or Fiend from Hell? It is under
Fiend,
that.
Fiend from Hell. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. That's our list for this week. Thank you, Leonard, for sending that in. If you would like to send us a contender for the Word Heavyweight Champion, you can do that at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That's our email address. It's where you can send us listener questions. Next week, we're going to be doing a listener question segment. So send in listener questions either to our email address or to our Tumblr. Actually, it may be better to send them to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com.
That's right. Matt and I will be answering questions on that Tumblr off and on, as well as doing the segment here on the show. So keep your eye on that. And thank you for backing the Patreon to make that happen.
Absolutely. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. If you go there, you can download the show, you can stream the show, you can read show notes, and you can leave comments. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that is where you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review. The more good reviews we get, the more we're featured on iTunes, and that's great for everybody. One promise from the Patreon is that every episode of the show, dating back to episode 1 of volume 1, where Huge was the host, is going to be available on iTunes very soon. That's something I hope to achieve this week. I hope to get all those episodes up on iTunes. So stay tuned for that. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, it's very easy. All you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you will find links to all my stuff, including Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective, my Monkey Brain comic series, drawn by Kevin Warren, with letters and design by Dylan Todd. The first arc, the entire first arc, is available now for less than $6. So go check that out. Chris, where can everybody find all your stuff?
Everybody can find all of my stuff at about.me/Chris Sims. You can find me on Twitter at the ISB. That's THEISB as in Batman. On Tumblr, theisb.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on War Rocket Ajax and at comicsalliance.com. Also, the Sailor Business Podcast. Make sure to check that one out at wax-work.com/sailor. That about does it for this week. We will be listing off our Patreon backers pretty soon on the air and thanking everybody for that. There's also going to be a little bit of backer-only bonus content going up, so make sure to check out the Patreon. And I promise we won't plug it as aggressively as we have been. But please check that out, and thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with another episode.
Yeah!
You can hit it.
Hang on, I'm yawning. I'm very sleepy.
Oh, Lord.
All right, now I'm ready.